Well, good evening, everyone. And I've just finished with the program number 13, the ill-fated number 13. I think it's okay. There were a few interruptions along the way, but and it may be a little choppy in places, but I think it will convey what I intended. We are dealing with five points, and I just want to review them. Here they are. Postulates, five postulates, that all that exists is based on sound or on the word. Number two, that differentiation is the result of sound. That on each plane, the word has a different effect. Number four, that according to the note of the word or the vibration of the sound, will the work of building in or casting out be accomplished? And that the one threefold word has seven keys, and these seven keys have their own subtones. Well, let's see, one way of looking at that is that the entire threefold word is considered as a unity which has seven keys. That unity has seven keys, and that kind of makes you think about any ray ashram with a major leader of the ashram plus seven subsidiary ashrams. That's one way of looking at a ray ashram and its subsidiaries. There is another way too, of course. And then we talked about the different solar systems and the fact that the keynote of our present solar system is not given, even though it's called the Blue System. And when we look at the note that is a blue note, it's the G, but the G can represent the seventh in the scale, or it can represent the fifth. So we're not quite sure whether a scale is to begin on the note A, in which the G would be do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, T or C. Well, you know, you gotta be careful using the word C because it also stands for note, but do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, do, sometimes it's done. So we have to be careful about that, whether it is a seventh. And I guess a leading tone seventh, just a half a step away from the return of the octave, or whether it represents a fifth. But we do have the colors at least. The activity system, the last system was green. This is the present system, the love system. It's second major, fifth in a row, it's blue. And then the next one will be the third major, and it's red. It's the sixth system. Now, out of those five postulates, well, anyway, DK has told us something about where the solar logos is polarized. It's cosmic astrally that he is polarized. So this, our solar logos, he's working actively on the cosmic etheric physical plane, where all of our struggles and our attempts at spirituality are to be found, and that he's working towards the problem of cosmic mind. He is not yet as serious as polarized in cosmic mind. This is just a little review of what we have gone over. And we will find this kind of material repeated in Cosmic Fire and elsewhere. And now, he's going to take the five postulates and do something different with them. He's handled already postulate number one. This is program 14, okay. So let's see. Postulate one is dealt with. And then we go on to the other postulates, but he is having four headings concerning them. Now we will divide what we have to say under four heads. The creative effect of the sacred word, the destructive effect of the sacred word, its pronunciation and use in individual meditation, B, in group and congregational work. I guess looking forward to the New World Religion and what kind of congregations we may have. And then C, for specific ends. And then point four, its effect on the bodies and centers and its efficacy in effecting egoic alignment. You can see what a very specific book this is. And for people who like the technicalities, it's really a fine book to study. So it looks like the creative effect of sound is, well, is it so? Four heads. Then he starts with the dual effect of the sacred word, constructive and destructive. Okay, well, this is, I see. First point relates to constructive use of the sacred word. And then the destructive use of the sacred word. Okay. I think that'll be enough there. Okay, so now we take up then points. It looks like we take up points one and two together. Or postulates one and two. The dual effect of the sacred word, constructive and destructive. It's page 53. Okay. We can today, he says, continue with the subject we were considering yesterday. We divided the theme into four divisions, and we will take the first two. Yes, the effect, creative and destructive, of the word. Just a few broad hints may be possible, will be possible, to form a basis for the intelligent application of the law. I see, I had kind of quit before the letter began because I was running out of time. Okay. So the creative and destructive use of the word. So that would account for the second and third postulate. One, two, three, and one, two, three. All right. First, let us repeat the truism that the worlds are the effect of sound. And I think basically that's the very first of the postulates. First life, then matter, then later the attraction of the matter to the life for purposes of its manifestation and expression, and the orderly arrangement of that matter into the necessary forms. Sound formed the allying factor, the propelling impulse, and the attractive medium. Well, as he said, you know, he's going to give us just the beginning underlying postulates, and we may shrink back from them. It's such a subject, such an extensive subject. So, you know, just to check that this is so, reviewing the postulates in red here. Yeah, here it is. That all that exists is based on sound and on the word, and that, well, I guess maybe all of this may be under the very first one, because we have differentiation. So what is this, these 4 points? These 4 points maybe have to do with point number one, and we have not yet gotten into postulate two, which talks about differentiation as the result of sound. So let's just say that these, and now postulate one is dealt with, and now come some subheadings under postulate one. So it seems. Okay. Creation, destruction, pronunciation, and the effect on bodies. Okay. So these are 4 divisions. These are 4 divisions dealing with, I think at least, postulate one. Okay. So first let us repeat the truism that it's all a question of sound. What is created is sound. So the first repetition concerns postulate one. And remember that all these postulates have for their foundation the 3 externalized, 4th emerging, and 3 additional becoming, or later emerging, fundamentals of the secret doctrine. So life is first, then matter. I've always considered matter the self-vision of life. To me, matter is the self-sight of life. There's really nothing else, and as life looks into itself, matter appears. This is, for me, an hypothesis. So first life, then matter. By whatever means, matter arises. Later, the attraction of the matter to the life for purposes of its manifestation and expression, and we might say in form. One way to look at this, a simple way, is to look at the dense physical and the etheric planes. So matter is attracted to the form-making power of the etheric planes. And then the matter is built into forms on the basis of the kinds of archetypes which exist as reflections of still higher archetypes within the systemic etheric level. So later the attraction of matter to the life for purposes of its manifestation and expression, and the orderly arrangement, you know, let's just say, and this orderly arrangement is having everything to do with etheric activity. Okay, so has everything to do with etheric activity, because the seventh ray, which rules the etheric physical plane, and especially the etheric part of it, is the ray of right arrangement. It's called many names, which give us that idea that form is created and arranged rightly. But sound is what brought them together, the allying factor, bringing matter and life together. It's the allying factor, the propelling impulse, and the attractive medium. So, you know, we've already seen in the work of Hans Selye, was it? If I'm pronouncing it correctly, and the use of tiny little particles of sand, maybe, that sound will draw them together into form. So it's the allying factor, sound is, 1, 2, 3, the propelling impulse, 1, 2, 3, and what else? If I can get down there, the attractive medium. I think there's so much to learn about sound. Sound is sound in an occult and deeply metaphysical sense stands for what we term the relation between, and is the creating intermediary, the linking third factor in the process of manifestation. So, you know, in a way, is sound related to consciousness? Well, what is the third factor? From one perspective, it is consciousness. From another perspective, at least according to my hypothesis, unless there is consciousness, there can be no matter. So the three factors to be considered, are life, matter, and consciousness. And maybe there, well, it always begins with life, but the question is, how does matter arise? Or maybe when we talk about life, we have another factor called spirit matter. And maybe all three arise, you know, perhaps spirit matter and consciousness arise simultaneously. And thus matter, divorced from spirit matter, rises at the same time. But anyway, we're told here that in a deeply occult sense, it or sound is the Akasha. So no wonder we have, let's just see if we look here. I think so far what I have is Tuya's diagrams, and I think I need also these other diagrams. Alice Bailey diagrams. And we'll look here at the creative hierarchies and we see here the, or we have seen the term Akasha. Now, at least Akasha belongs, well, let me make sure that you see that too. Akasha does belong here in relation to the second subplane of the cosmic physical plane, or the second systemic plane, or solar plane, that aether belongs here with the third systemic plane, or the third subplane, cosmic subplane, and maybe fire or something like that we can put on the very first. So there is a place where we can see that aether, Akasha, and fire are the three elemental states that belong to the third down, the second down, and the first down, the subplanes, which are those, cosmic subplanes, which are those. Okay, so sound in an occult, I'm going to reread it, and deeply metaphysical sense stands for that which we term the relation between and is the creating intermediary, the linking third factor in the process of manifestation. It's here as he starts to talk about these things that the process of understanding is challenged. And Akasha is considered to be the relation between arises. Okay. Who says this is an easy book, huh? The Akasha is the relation between. So on the higher planes, sound, I guess, it is the great, is the agent of the great entity who wields the cosmic law of gravitation in its relation to our solar system, whilst on the lower planes it demonstrates as the astral light, the great agent of reflection that fixes and perpetuates on its vibratory bosom the past, the present, and the future or what we call time. Whoa, what a sentence that is. So sound stands for the relation between and is the creating intermediary. Now, we have some lists that include sound, and they often occur in a particular order. One order is, okay, let's see if I can do this. I'm going to say orders. I'm going to list orders in which the factor of sound, that's not what we want, the factor of sound is included. And one of them is vibration, light. Well, let me get this straight. Vibration, light, sound, color. And another is sound. And I think light comes second, and then form, maybe, or color and form. But anyway, the Akasha has a lot to do with magnetism, and the corresponding plane, two from the top and two from the bottom, have similarities, the corresponding planes. So the astral plane and the monadic plane have certain attractive similarities. Two from the top, monadic, and two from bottom, astral. I guess, you know, for people like ourselves, it may be sufficient just to learn how to speak and to learn how to use words in a way which are just and true, accurate, meaningful, not idle, not hateful. You know, if you turn to page 473 of A Treatise on White Magic, as you read down, you'll see the kinds of use of speech which we have to abandon. The idle word, the selfish word, the hateful word will each have their effect. So on the higher planes, it, and I'm assuming that this means sound, meaning sound, I think so, is the agent of the great entity who wields the cosmic law of gravitation in its relation to our solar system. So the great entity is greater. Let's see. Than the logos of our solar system. Whilst on the lower planes, it demonstrates as the astral light, you know, with holding together the memories of the past. The great agent of reflection that fixes and perpetuates. So, you know, the minute you see a word like fixes, the law of, sorry, law of fixation, the fifth systemic law. And we do have a way in which those fifth ray monads are related to the work on the astral plane, working from the cosmic astral to the cosmic physical and the astral division of it. So we have gravitation and fixation in relation to sound. And let's see here. Yeah. Gravitation. Whoop. Close. Hit the wrong button and you're in trouble. Gravitation and fixation in relation to sound. It's the most mysterious factor, but as I say, you know, in the work of some of the experimental acoustics, and I say the work of Dr. Hans Selye, I think that's correct, the drawing of tiny little particles, whether of sand or some other kind of powder, the rearrangement of those particles according to the sound that to which they are submitted, or the sound which, or note, which vibrates through the plate. Is it a metal plate on which they are resting? With every different kind of note, a different configuration occurs. And maybe we see something like that with the Japanese doctor. I can't remember his name, but he works with water particularly and subjects it to thought and also to sounds. I guess most thoughts have their own sound associated. In direct relation to the lower vehicle, it manifests as electricity, prana, and magnetic fluid. And a simplification of the idea may come to you perhaps in the recognition of sound as the agent of attraction and repulsion. So here is DK giving this kind of work, this kind of book. 100 years ago, at the very outset of his work, realizing what a very technical foundation this book provides, and it's an unexpectedly technical foundation. So we have, let's see, what do we have? Higher planes, gravitation. Lower planes, fixation. Lowest plane, we have electricity, prana, and magnetic fluid. And maybe this magnetic fluid has something to do with animal magnetism. All of these are phenomena associated. All these are phenomena associated with sound. All right. So, not to forget the title of the chapter or the subject that we're dealing with, and it is the dual effect of the sacred word, constructive and destructive. And all of this is under the idea that it is that all things created are the result of sound, one of the postulates. So now we deal with the seven great breaths. And maybe if we go back up a bit to the four aspects. Well, I don't seem to see this listed, but under the idea that all things are created through sound, we have these four factors, and we're working now with the creative and destructive effect. Four factors under the first, under postulate one, regarding the fact that all things are the result of sound. And if we go farther back, we'll see it as it is expressed, that all that exists is based on sound or on the word. It does seem to be the great differentiator. And it makes me wonder about the relationship between the reduction of self-perception and the sounds that occur through that reduction. I admit it's kind of maybe a far out hypothesis relating to the psychological nature of the whole creative process. You know, when that phone rings, it can cut across your thoughts. So we're just trying to keep our outlines straight here as much as is possible. Five postulates, seven fundamentals of the secret doctrine, three of which have emerged. And under postulate one, that all that exists is based on sound, we have four factors or points to take up. And we have just taken up the question, of the creative and destructive effect of the sacred word. Now we've come to something called the seven great breaths, and I'm not quite sure how it fits into the outlines. Maybe if I were to look here at page 53 in Letters on Occult Meditation, I'll just try to find it, that is. Which I will do, and letters in page 53, and if I were to change this so you can see too, the four factors under the very first postulate are there. And we've considered the dual effect of the sacred word, constructive and destructive. And the very next thing is the seven great breaths. And let's see if there are any other that are marked in blue that way. Coming up. Oh, so this is all pretty. And meditation on the word Yes, these all seem to be coming under an analysis of the first factor, the creative and destructive effect of the sacred word. So here we are now, then. I mean, you know, it will help, of course, to have the actual book in front of you as well, because my outlines tend to get a little expansive as I'm changing colors and fonts. So our next subject here is the seven great breaths. And it goes on from 54 to 58. In sounding forth the sacred word in its sevenfold completeness for this solar system, the Logos gathered through inspiration the matter needed for the manifestation and started the evolution of that matter at the first great breath. So that kind of makes you think about the three outpourings, the first being vertical, the second being a rounded cycle or an oval cycle, and the third being a descent from above that meets the oval cycle as it moves upward. And I wonder if I can find a way to show that. Maybe here. We'd have to go, you know, quite a bit farther back to the outpourings. Here it is. So here is the direct conditioning of matter. Here is the oval cycle, which once it has tended upwards is met by the final closure, which has to do with the descent of the highest aspect, which is the monad. So I think, you know, we have what we need to see in this is about the logos of our solar system, and it's also from the Theosophist, but DK has seen fit to include it, so it must have some accuracy in relation to the image. Okay, so in the sounding forth of the sacred word, in its sevenfold completeness for this solar system, the logos gathered through inspiration. How do you do that? some kind of irresistible magnetism, let's call it that, some kind of irresistible, irresistible magnetism, the matter needed for manifestation. Because matter is not form. Let's just really remember that. Matter is not form. Matter is associated with the third aspect of divinity, but the form building aspect is the second, working, I think, in cooperation with the seventh, and started the evolution of that matter at the first great breath. Now, what is a breath anyway? You know, it's some kind of efflux of energy. A breath is an efflux of energy. And what we have here is the activities and functions of the seven great logoic or solo logoic breaths. And I'll, you know, make everything capital here. So this is at the very beginning of our solar system. I mean, we're not right now talking about the universe, but maybe some kind of extrapolation is possible as we move towards understanding the creative process in ever larger holes or sources. Cosmic logoi, supercosmic logoi, galaxies, etc. So that's the first. And started the evolution of matter at the first great breath. Now, what is this evolution of matter? You know, it probably has a lot to do with impressing matter, with the qualities that are resident within the impressor. And if the matter from the previous solar system were simply regathered and allowed to pursue its own course according to the patterned activity of the first major solar system, it would not be evolving. It has to be impressed by the second solar system patterns. Okay, so this is, you know, in a way, number one. And I'll just, I don't want it to be thought of as something the Tibetan wrote when I put a one there. I just want it as a marker. At the second great breath came differentiation and the instilling of the second logoic aspect. So, you know, what can we call this? Maybe we can call this something like form building. It's interesting to see differentiation occur in relation to the number two. Here, differentiation occurs in relation to the number two. And not three. Usually the differentiator is the third aspect. Well, or it will select that which has been differentiated. At the third great breath, the activity aspect was demonstrated. Matter was impregnated with that faculty, and fivefold evolution became a possibility. This relates to fivefold Brahma. Number of the previous solar system was five. So let's 1, 2, 3. We'll try to keep these differentiated because it's a slightly different list than we might expect. Maybe it's not entirely tied to the rays. Maybe these breaths, well, you know, usually when you have an ordered sequence, they are tied to the rays, but let's see if that's the case. So differentiation came here. First, simply the gathering, and sometimes first ray is involved in that gathering. You just pull it all together and you impress it. That's the healing method of the first ray. Or let's say that when you're looking for substance, you just get any old substance, you pull it together and you impress it with a quality that it must carry. And that's a first ray method. And with the second ray, looking for the right substance, you cultivate it. You know, in a way, the law of attraction and repulsion, I'm going to say here is important, the law of attraction and repulsion is a differentiator. Because, you know, if you attract matter of a certain kind and repel matter of a different kind, differentiation results. And the third method of attraction, or the third method of matter utilization, is called selectivity. There is a slow teaching, impressing, forgive the English, going on with the second ray, and a selectivity of pre-differentiated matter when the third ray method is involved. There are so many different processes here, aren't there? You know, just gives you the impression that we human beings know, you know, so little of the cosmic process. We just think we're awakening. Well, we don't think we're awake. We think we're awake, and we think we are the, isn't it ludicrous, the supreme intelligence in the universe, and everything else is just stuff. What a remarkably anthropocentric point of view. And then when occultism confirms the fact that there are types of man on each of the planets, or at least on most of them, quite a few of them, when we look at the esoteric schools to be found on the different planets, well, we just realize that we have been confirmed in our suspicion that we are not the, as a human race, the center and sole intelligent activity in the entire universe. Well, thus does the intelligence grow. We may have lived on a flat earth, with the sun and all the stars quite close, and everything was the center here. Earth was the center of the universe, if we could even call it a universe. Such was the primitive point of view of medievalism, although, you know, much earlier and through the presence of initiates, and the mysteries, the greater truth was known. So anyway, at the second breath came differentiation, and we can imagine here's all this matter, and now you arrange it into vibrational states, ranged into planes or vibrational states. And then third grade breath, activity was demonstrated. Well, that really fits with the third aspect of divinity, activity. Cannot be separated from the third aspect of divinity. Matter was impregnated with that faculty. Let's call it the faculty of activity. And remember, there is no activity unless there is division. You can't have activity within utter homogeneity, utter sameness, no activity. So, and Saturn, for us anyway, the key dividing factor, along with Mars, but Saturn carries the scythe, you know, which divides this from that. So it is the factor of division, and the abuse of the Saturnian energy gives us the great heresy of separateness. So matter was impregnated with that faculty, and fivefold evolution became a possibility. Fivefold Brahma with the top of the Brahmic planes being ruled by Saturn, as we have seen, perhaps when we go back here to the table of creative hierarchies, and we notice that Saturn rules the fifth plane. Libra, Saturn, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. See, all these things fit together. All of these capacities, these faculties bear upon one another. And in order to understand, we have to have a pretty good fifth ray estimation of the aspects that we're dealing with and the parts and pieces that have to be brought into right relationship. Fivefold evolution, the faculty of activity. Now let's see, you know, I hope I'm somewhat correct here, because I'm not looking ahead at the other breaths. At the fourth great breath, see, this is a little different. All of this is a bit different from specific ray activity, so it appears. It's a listing of seven, but it's not necessarily, well, maybe there's some ray order to it. Let's see about this. At the fourth great breath, certain of the hierarchies responded, because, you know, these hierarchies are solar systemic, not just related to our planet. And the great builders more clearly saw the plan. It was laid out on the tracing board, the blueprint of creation. And there is a definite connection between the fourth breath and the fourth creative hierarchy, that of the human spirits, and what we have here, the human monads. This fourth note of the logos, so now we connect, this is interesting, we connect a breath with a note, has a special significance for the human spirit and a unique effect in this earth and in this fourth cycle. What is that fourth note? Well, is it a yellow note? Is it a note of the fourth ray, which would be do, re, mi, you know? Do, re, mi, 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 maybe. Kind of interesting how singers warm up on a mi, 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 mi to get their resonance going properly. Or is this fourth somehow connected, this fourth note somehow connected with the literal fourth note? Do, re, mi, fa, which is the green note. And yet we are dealing with the idea of yellow. Well, both of them come from the previous major solar system. The fourth note of the Logos has a special significance for the human spirit. And this is important, that a breath and a note occur simultaneously. A breath and a note seem to occur simultaneously. Because the breath passes over the vocal cords of the solar logos, well, or whatever the higher correspondence is to the sound-making apparatus. So this fourth note of the logos has a special significance for the human spirit and an unique effect in this earth, fourth planet from the sun, at least fourth major planet. Maybe there's a couple of those intra-mercurial planets, not only Vulcan, but another. But we have Vulcan, Mercury, Venus, and then the Earth, fourth. The relativity of it is such that it is difficult for you in any way to realize that effect. I mean, the effect of our monadic quality. Effect of our monadic quality. It demonstrates, as far as you can grasp it, in the harmonic note of the fourth plane and ray. Now, what will that be? Will it be a yellow note? Because for man, the Buddhic plane is yellow. Or a love wisdom blue note, because the sixth principle of love wisdom demonstrates on the Buddha plane. That note permeates the peoples of the world at this time and ever since the fourth root ray. So it sounds very, this sounds related to, harmony through conflict. It shows itself in the struggle, yes. It shows itself in the struggle of humanity to grasp the ideal of harmony and peace, and in the worldwide aspiration in that direction. So, you know, beginning to sound a Buddhic yellow fourth ray note containing the presence of conflict, and yet the means of harmonization, because, you know, there's a place where he talks about the harmonizing color yellow in the autumn, of course, up in certain locales on Earth, and the uniformity of the yellow, and hence the harmonization. Okay, well, we have been dealing with the fourth great solar logoic breath and tying it in with the fourth ray and with the human creative hierarchy, which is the fourth. So that note, that solar logoic note, permeates the peoples of the world at this time and ever since the fourth root race. Yes, we are learning that the numbers are significant, and it shows itself in the struggle of humanity to grasp the ideal of harmony and peace in the worldwide aspiration in that direction. Now, what we see here, since it, the proper study of mankind is man, we see the fourth being related here by the Tibetan to the fourth hierarchy and maybe to the fourth kingdom. The fourth creative hierarchy, well, at least human beings, whatever hierarchy they are listed in, are found throughout the solar system, as I have been saying. Excuse me. So this fourth breath is especially applicable to human evolution. And now we're going to talk about some subtones related to the Yeah, he's reviewing here. He's reviewing, and it appears that these subtones are related to the first postulate. It appears that the subtones are related to the first postulate. And we've been looking at, five potential postulates, and we still seem to be dealing with postulate number one. Now let's see. Or perhaps we're dealing with divisions of the seven great breaths. Let's see if we can discern this. So we have in subtone one, the threefold word gave the first vibratory note and started the movement of the spheres, solar and atomic. It embodies the will, and comets change into planets and undertake the kind of movement for which presently they are known. Then subtone two of the threefold word instilled the second aspect and called the cosmic ruler of the synthetic ray into manifestation, the synthetic ray, the indigo ray, love wisdom, into manifestation, and it marked duality or reflex love. Uh-huh, okay. Well, we may have to change our estimation here of what these subtones really are. We'll try to think through it together. Subtone two. And I think they are related to the okay, I'm going to get rid of these. And yeah, subtone two. And subtone three of the threefold word made our fivefold evolution possible. Yes, I think he's gone back to the seven subsidiaries of the five of the threefold word. So so let's say that DK is now reviewing and dealing with the seven subsidiaries of the threefold word. And that threefold word, subsidiaries, there it is. And maybe we can go back a little bit here. So in dealing with these subtones, strangely, it is the, let's just say here, it is the, in dealing with the subtones, we are dealing with postulate five here written down, here written, that the one threefold word has seven keys, and these seven keys have their own subtones. It seems that this is where we are. So it's a little bit intricate. Subtone three of the threefold word made our fivefold evolution possible. We've looked at that earlier, the evolution of Brahma. It is the basic note of the five lower planes. It is marked by activity or adaptability, so probably a fa, which is a third ray note. And subtone four, I think we've gone this far so far, of the threefold word is the sound of the human hierarchy, and in its entirety might be called the cry of man. Mm-hmm. So man comes up prominently here. Okay, and we've just been dealing with breaths. Now, let's just say, let's look and see whether the breaths are these seven great breaths. This is what we have to ask. Are these seven great breaths the same as the subtones listed below? Breath number three and breath number four seem to be so. And we'll have to see about breath number, what we learn here. Breath three and four, breaths three and four seem to be the same as the subtones. Okay, and we only go as far. Okay, there have been four great breaths given. Four of the seven breaths have been noted. And if the subtones are the same as the breaths, we have four and four. Four breaths so far, and four subtones. Well, certainly, you know, the breath number three has to do with the Brahmic evolution, and so does subtone three. And breath number four has to do with, especially with the human creative hierarchy, and so does subtone number four. Maybe for subtone one and subtone two, the relationship between the breaths and the subtones is a little less exactly expressed. Quite a bit is said about subtone or breath number four, breath number three, and with breath number two, the instilling of the second aspect logoic, which is differentiation, and breath number one, starting the evolution of matter on its way. But there are so many different aspects to these outlines that we could take the whole of this and really break it down and study it for focally for a long time to try to gather from it. So here we have for subtone two, the atomic, the synthetic ray, and for breath number two, we have the idea of differentiation. And for subtone one, we have the starting of the movement of the spheres, whether solar or atomic, and maybe is that rotary motion or revolutionary motion. But for breath number one, we have the inspired gathering of matter. So breath one and breath two do not correspond as exactly as subtone. Well, they do not correspond exactly to subtones one and two. Maybe there's a way to find them in that, find the correspondence. Each of the sounds called into manifestation, each of the sounds directly calls into manifestation one ray with all that appears on that ray. Each sound demonstrates, particularly on one plane, being the dominant note of that plane. Fair enough. And expected. There are going to be, I suppose, just the way there are seven breaths, there are going to be seven subtones. Now, the next section is about the fifth great breath. And let's see if the sixth and seventh are listed. Yes, they are. But they seem to be, very closely related. So all of this foregoing, the foregoing has been on the creative or constructive. Factor. And now the destructive factor. I think the only thing to do is to go back to the book itself, where things are listed more closely together, and maybe the overall outline can be found. So now we have to find out whether these four subtones pertained to the only to the fourth of the, or was it the fifth of the postulates? We have to find out whether the breaths and the subtones are the same, basically. We must determine whether the breaths and the subtones are the same. So now here we are with the fifth great breath. I don't have a nice orange color, unfortunately. So, you know, one of the colors for the fifth ray is the color yellow, so I'll use that, and I won't use the esoteric color, which is the indigo. The fifth breath has an effect peculiar to itself, for in its reverberation, it holds the key to all. And by the way, I want to say that with the fifth ray, law of repulse, the key, the symbol of the key, is used in a dominant manner. Give me the key, the anguished seeker cried, you know. And then the key dropped down from heaven, or from the top, from the opening of the top of the pyramid. So this is interesting. It's related to the first ray. It's called the breath of fire. It holds the key to all. And the term key, as I say, is a symbol very much used when describing the dynamics of the fifth ray, especially in the law of repulse. He was deep in a pyramid, you know, and he was working there. Law of integration and the and the law of repulse. Let me see if I can, you know, find that. Let's see here. Okay. So I'm going to go to Esoteric Psychology 2 and Pyramid Key. And there's one. And I think these are all stanzas having to do with with the law of repulse. I do believe, yeah, they are all the law of repulse. And so we see the direction of Ray 5 and how he worked down in the laboratory toiling at his work. And finally, he cried aloud in despair, "Give me the key. I alone can do no more good. Give me the key." And then there was silence in which, you know, the answer occurs. So through the opening on the summit of the pyramid dropped from the blue of heaven, so there's the blue also related to Ray 5, esoterically, a key came down. It landed at the feet of the discouraged worker. The key was of pure gold, which presumably is of the highest value and can open doors. The shaft of the key, the shaft of light, and upon the key a label, and writ in blue these words, "Destroy that which thou hast built and build anew, but only build when thou hast climbed the upward way, traversed the gallery of tribulation, and entered into light within the chamber of the king. Build from the heights, and thus shew forth the value of the depths." The worker then destroyed the objects of his previous toil, sparing three treasures, which he knew were good, I suppose the different aspects of mind, and upon which the light could shine. He struggled towards the chamber of the king, and still he struggles. So this is meant to show how important a symbol the key is for the fifth ray process. Okay. So the fifth great breath, and then seeking to find out whether it's also the somehow the fifth subtone, holds the key to all, and it's called the breath of fire. This is extraordinarily occult stuff, and in a preliminary book, the readers of which are liable to overlook at first its occult profundity. So it created a similar vibration to that of the cosmic mental plane. It created, and we might say, within our solar system, a similar vibration to the cosmic mental plane, and is closely allied with the first breath. We don't know what was the mental body ray of the Buddha. We know a third ray monad, a second ray soul, and a first ray personality. Probably a second ray astral body, if we can even talk about it existing, but maybe a fifth ray mind, because he did touch the cosmic mental plane. He had, along with the Christ, a cosmic touch, cosmic mental for the Buddha, cosmic astral for the Christ. It is the dominant note in technical musical terminology of the solar system. Now, this is kind of interesting. The dominant and the fifth. So there's a hint here, a big hint. A big hint here, just as the third breath corresponds to the major third. Now, what is the fifth ray note? A fifth ray note is the A. Is the fifth ray note the A, which all orchestras, or many, let's say, tune themselves? The note La, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. Yeah, the dominant. And then we would begin on a D if the note La were to be the dominant. So it would be Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La. Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La. And, you know, interestingly, La is an indigo note. According to HPB, I think. So there is the connection of the fifth ray, esoterically, to indigo. Whoa, it's intricate, you know. So the third breath corresponds to the major third. Breaths correspond to tones. So indeed, indeed, breaths correspond to tones, or in this case, subtones. So there's a network of relationships here that needs to be explored. Normally the dominant note of this solar system, we have to ask, what is the dominant musically of this solar system? Well, it depends on whether in this solar system we're going to base our foundational Do on a C or an A or even a D. If it was a D, then indeed A would be the dominant. So, you know, when people say, here are the notes of the solar system, it's kind of a glib gesture. And they appear in books and people take it for granted, but there are just some really intricate relationships here, depending on where you find the foundational Do, which is the note of matter. The second, the D is considered in one way a kind of a sun note. Mars for the C and sun for the D, then maybe veiling Vulcan. So, you know, in the last analysis, we do not know the dominant note of our solar system. We do not know the key note of our solar system, but there are various candidates for this. So if the third breath corresponds to the major third, then the fifth breath, according to the way DK is presenting, corresponds to the dominant. So I'll put that down. If the third breath corresponds to the major third musically, then the fifth breath corresponds to the dominant. Musically considered. Let's spell the word correctly somehow. And I'll capitalize major and third. But he doesn't really say, yeah, he does say major third. The minor third is nostalgic. And in this case, with a do starting on the red note of C, the minor third would be an E flat. So it does seem that breaths correspond to tones. And it's really interesting to think that that this fifth breath represents the dominant note of our solar system. And is closely allied with the first breath, which I overlooked here. And this, the tetractys, reveals to us as the fifth point is directly under the first point and not under the second and third points in the second line. Tetractys. Maybe that's the way we have to spell it. So, my goodness, what a lot of, there's some musical hints here which are just really necessary. The key to all, and we might say to all within our solar system. And it's related with the fifth ray law of repulse, or the, you know, fifth ray law, or stanza for the law of repulse. The symbol of the key is used a great deal, as I showed us. And here we have the breath of fire, which has been, because it is related to the first ray, the fire element is there, and that has been a kind of a breathing exercise that has come from the East and probably without proper supervision has caused a lot of difficulty. So it created a similar vibration to that of the cosmic mental plane. Should we say cosmic coming down to the cosmic physical plane? and is closely allied with the first breath, which gets everything going. And this the Zetractis reveals to us as the fifth point of the Zetractis. Is directly under the first point. You know, our bowling pin set up. 1, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4. The 5 is right under the 1, telling us something about the tendency of the fifth ray to resolve into the first ray. And telling us something also about the misuse of those rays by the Black Lodge, which is ruled by the first and fifth rays together. And then, you know, a little side thought, what was the mental body ray of the Buddha? Well, actually, I've made a mistake there. And a first-rate personality, could it be the mental body ray of the Buddha? And I want to say, no, 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 because that mental body was on the sixth ray. So I can't forget that, but of course he had all those other qualities from work so long upon the mind. I'm surprised that I dropped that out of my mind just now. Anyway, whatever this fifth breath or fifth subtone is, it is the dominant note of the solar system. And if it's the dominant note, it's 5 above the tonic, as it's called. Dominant note, and let's call this 5 notes above the tonic, which is Do in the solfeggio system, which, you know, musicians tend to learn. So, just as the third breath corresponds to the major third, so it may tell us something, you know. DK often says, well, I can't tell you this, and then just a little bit later, he gives some hints, which if they are recognized, may bring us to evaluating or getting a hint upon a secret of the sixth initiation. But of course, our uncertainty prevents ascertainment, and we can't really present it to anybody as ascertained. It is interesting, however, that we tune up on the note A, even though the A frequencies are different with different countries, different times, different orchestras. The Japanese orchestras tune high, and in the period of Bach, they tune the A low. It's usually considered to be 440, but sometimes 447 vibrations per second, sometimes something like 416 or something like that, cycles per second. So this business of studying harmonics under the fourth ray, it does require mathematical exactitude. So we can make a hypothesis here that breaths do correspond to tones or subtones. And we have the A note, generally speaking, to be an indigo note. And when do, as in do, re, mi, you know, is the red note, then la is the A or indigo note. It's just that we don't know from where to begin. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la. My body lies over the ocean. See, that's the way to get that interval. Do, la. And in that context, it is the indigo note. Okay. And so, DK says something maybe he doesn't say anywhere else and has to be deeply considered when we say, hey, this is the blue solar system. It is the note of the logos. So it is an indigo note, a synthetic note, and the note of the so-called blue logos. Well, I know there seem to be a lot of little sidetracks here. Each, but you know, one day it will all clarify for you and for me. There are just a number of candidates. We do know we have a blue logos. That's what he's called. And the color of the second solar system is blue. But which blue? Is it the blue of a dominant beginning on C, or is it a blue of the indigo blue of the note A, which is the la note, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do? And in any case, we cannot ascertain it. We cannot be certain. Each breath attracts to the logos, for purposes of manifestation, some entity on cosmic levels. Whoa. Have I ever read this before? Have you? So our logos is kind of a cosmic entity, and maybe others of the solar logoi who are part of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, are also cosmic entities. However, a cosmic logos is a still greater cosmic entity. So what stratum of cosmic entity are we talking about here? Cosmic logos, supercosmic logos, page 344, the chart in Cosmic Fire is the one to consult. What stratum of entity, of cosmic entity, are we really discussing? And also, so pages 293 and 344 of TCF. So a breath is a tone, and a tone attracts. A breath is a tone, and a tone attracts, or can also repel. We're told, interestingly, that there's not as much first ray entering our solar system because at this time, the solar logos has decided, or maybe taken advantage of the order in which things naturally occur, to work on the second great ray of love, wisdom. And maybe that's true of our planetary logos with its first ray monad occultly inoperative because this is a non-sacred planet, but the second ray is operative because the soul is emerging. So in any case, first ray is somewhat occultly deflected from our solar system and even from our planet during this second major solar systemic manifestation. Then, you know, to try to make things easier for us, gives an analogy here. The reflection of the method can be seen in the microcosm when the ego sounds the egoic note in the three worlds and prepares to manifest or come into incarnation. Have we read about that, I think? Before the incarnation begins, there is the sounding of the note. And if it lacks fullness or is ill-attuned somehow to what is already stored within the causal body, then maybe a personality of a certain quality is selected to supply the deficiency or to contribute to better attunement. The note attracts around the permanent atoms or nuclei adequate matter for the purpose of manifestation, and that matter is itself informed by some vital entity. Well, I just must say, you know, I rarely get the feeling that I haven't read something before, but here I just get the feeling, have I read this before? Have I absorbed anything before? So there is a microcosmic correspondence to the sounding of a logoic note or tone or subtone, which attracts some entity on cosmic levels. And so a note is attracting matter, and the matter is informed by some vital entity. So the sounded note is attracting matter of a certain kind, and that matter is informed by a particular entity. No wonder Master DK says we may stand back hesitantly in awe of this subject. And of course, it just gives you an idea of what he really knows and how little of it can be conveyed at this point to us as beginners. Similarly, the cosmic lords of fire, the great informing entities of our solar system, respond when this fifth subtone is sounded forth. Where to take this? How far can we take it? Cosmic lords of fire, great informing entities, no doubt beyond our solar system. Respond when this fifth subtone is sounded forth, which, as MDK says, holds the key to all. And other analogies, again, the lords of the flame, within the solar system itself responded when the microcosm sounded the fifth subtone of the monadic note. And we can say before individualization, intelligence was sharpening under the influence of the fifth ray. The mental unit was being produced. So again, you know, the Lords of the Flame, they came partially from our own planetary system, and especially from the Venus chain and globe of our planetary scheme, but Venus was involved, and I suppose there are Lords of the Flame about which we know nothing, because the solar angels and these other correspondences to that which surrounds Kumara, namely Kumaras, exist for many planets in our solar system and not just for Earth. So the number five is the key calling in greater supervisory entities. And, you know, what can we say when the third initiation is taken? The transfiguration is occurring. The fifth ray is ruling. What kind of solar energies are called in to begin the series of solar initiations, which begins at the third degree? Ah, oh, goodness. And it takes us as far, let's see, do I have the stamina to continue? I'm not sure. No, that's not going to be right. It's still a bit away from us here, the conclusion of this section. The sixth great breath. What color shall I use? Maybe the lighter blue, perhaps. Drew to itself the Lords of the mysterious pentacle, the volatile essences of the emotional plane, the desire faculty clothed in matter, the watery aspect of the logoic life. Hence, so related to Neptune, Varuna, and the rulers of the systemic astral plane and cosmic astral plane. Pentacle sounds like a fivefold figure, but, you know, it is mysterious. So maybe I just, you know, kind of let it go at that. And I'll keep that light blue color going. So it does seem that different types of Devic beings respond to the different notes. To the seven subtones or the seven great breaths. It does seem, now of course all this can be straightened out later, but it does seem that subtones and breaths are pretty much identical here. So we'll capitalize this, the seven subtones and the seven breaths. He does seem to go back and forth that to release the breath over the correspondence to the vocal cords produces the sound, and the two are related. At the sounding of the seventh subtone, crystallization occurred. This is, you know, the dense physical plane as we usually understand it. And there is crystallization also. We might consider the etheric plane to be crystallized. I think we see the difference in the complexity of this particular chapter and some of the foregoing ones, which were intricate enough. So at the sounding of the seventh subtone, should we say by the solar logos, crystallization occurred and absolute conformity, a seventh ray term, to the law of approach. So matter, dense matter, conformed to etheric patterns. PHYSI, oh goodness, physical. Should learn how to spell that. It resulted in the dense aspect of manifestation, the point of deepest experience, that in which we are presently immersed. You will note in this connection with the ray of ceremonial law, one of the great building rays, along with the second ray, a ray which adjusts matter under set forms to desired shapes. I think that says a lot about how this seventh ray is used in the world, and that not all people have that capacity. A ray which adjusts matter under set forms to the desired shapes. Well, perhaps the desired shapes pre-exist on the etheric plane. Any desired shapes to manifest on the dense physical plane. I think, you know, that is the case. The etheric subplanes are archetypal. They have archetypal arrangements when compared with the more chaotic outer dense physical plane. So far, we have seven great breaths and seven tones, and they are related to a three-in-one setup. kind of an originating trinity. And it has been maybe a lengthy digression, certainly a complicated one. And things have been said about the breaths and about the associated rays and about subtones or tones, which deal with the magnetic power of sound, basically. So, we have been discussing, let's see, in summary, breaths, tones, rays, and the magnetic attractive power of sound, i.e. creative and constructive. Now we can get into the destructiveness shortly. It will be another day's work. And, you know, I can only recommend that we, as much as time allows, read this over and over again to have an idea of the occult dynamics lying behind the effects, the appearances of things in the outer world of manifestation. So trying to keep the outline straight maybe requires a little bit here of actually going into the book. And we have, you know, listed everything that I've done in the more expanded and commented upon version. And here are the various breaths. And coming up, let's see, yeah, meditation and the word. So these are all, you know, subject areas. And I'll take it as far as the beginning of the destructive factor. Okay. I realize you didn't see that little bit, but I was around page 56, 57, 58. And yes, there we are. Now, DK will say, why am I doing all this? You may ask here, why have I thus apparently digressed? And of course, the word is apparently. It seems to you wide of the mark and beside the question? Let me elucidate. The microcosm has but to repeat the work of the macrocosm. The spirit or monad it does use the personal pronoun, interestingly. The spirit or monad on his own plane sounds forth the note, his hierarchical note, and descends into incarnation. And what is this hierarchical note? You know, as there are different rays of the monad, and maybe all seven notes of the normally divided diatonic scale. And then finally, the notes fa, sol, and do, whichever fa, sol, and do we are using, as we've seen, we seem to have a threefold choice. So the monad sounds forth his hierarchical note and descends into incarnation. It is both the note of attraction and of out-breathing, because as the descent occurs, attraction occurs. As the descent, D-E-S-C-E-N, occurs, the out-breathing also occurs. The sound, in this case, has been attracting and differentiating and organizing the needed material through which the monad can manifest. The personality, the reflection of that monad at the densest point of evolution, I mean, the causal body too is the reflection, the spiritual triad too is the reflection, is linked to the monad by the attractive force of the sacred word sounded by its monad on its note and on its own subtone. And here you begin to wonder, is the note one, two, or three, and is the subtone one, two, three, four, five, six, seven? Or is the subtone the note of the soul? So basically, what we're trying to do is imitate what goes on very high spiritual divine levels and do this in an individual way below. But the work of outbreathing is already accomplished. It is involution. The work of inbreathing or reabsorption into the source progresses. And this is of great importance. Exhalation is in involutionary. Inhalation is evolutionary. So I want to say that. Exhalation is involutionary and inhalation is evolutionary. When the personality finds for itself, after lives of stress and search, its spiritual note within the right key and subtone, whoa, what is the result? So, you know, big hints are given there, musically considered. What is the result? And let's just say, we learn here that a note may be differently placed and mean different functions within different keys. So what do we have? The monadic note Let's see. Yeah. Monadic note, we have the spiritual note. We have the key in which that or those notes hold place. And we have the subtones of the higher notes. I really couldn't possibly describe all that without hours of thought and maybe the offering of some speculations. But the personality has to find all that, or should we say, the soul in incarnation within the personality has to find these sources, notes, tones, and subtones within the proper key or scale. In other words, a note means different things in different scales, as I've been trying to explain. Like for the note G, if I start on the red note Do, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, then that note G is a dominant fifth. But if I start with Do on the note A, Do, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Yam, Da, La, Mi, Dam, Di, Dam, Di, Di. Let's see here. Di, 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 Di. Let's see. That's not quite right. Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La. That's it. Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La. Aha. Ti, Do. Ah, the G is the seventh. That's it. Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La. T, it's the note T. Do. I'm sorry if that was confusing. Anyway, in the scale of C, the note G is the dominant fifth. In the scale starting on A, the G is the leading tone, or it is the seventh. And I suppose it's the flatted seventh and not the leading tone so much. Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti. Ti, Do. That's the A again. Ti, Ti, Da, 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 Da. Da, 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 Da. That's the note G. One, two, three, four, five. And then we'll reach the same note if we start on A, with A as the Do. I wish I could have it just sounding here. Da di da da di da da da. This is an A. A, B, C sharp, D, E, F sharp, G. That's called the leading tone. Dee-dum. But it's also possible to do a different mode. Dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. And that would be, now I see what the problem is. It's not a G sharp, it's a G. So, that is going to be our G. Yep, that's it. I hope that all wasn't a bunch of nonsense for you. C, D, E, F, G. And then from A as Do. Da, 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 da. And there's your G. Going to A. Well, what it's all about is that different notes mean different things and hold different functions. Rather, the same note means different things and holds different functions within different scales. So anyway, when the personality finds for itself after lives of stress and search, I'm sure we can identify with that. Its spiritual note with the right key. Now that's it, you see. We've got to be on the right do, the right fundamental, and the spiritual note will mean different things depending on the do that we use. And the do is always the foundational note. If you have a relative do, a moving do, sometimes there's just like a absolute do, and it's always middle C. Dum, dum. It's always middle C. But then there's the relative do, the moving do, and then different tones represent different functions within the scales produced by the moving do, the beginning of the scale. So what is the result? Confusion. Oh my. It accords with its monadic note. That is, the personality does. Now, you know what's interesting here? Think of the sun sign and the point opposite the sun sign. So the personality is represented by the sun sign, and the monad by the point opposite the sun sign. But of course, the sun sign keeps changing. So we're talking about the use of different astrological qualities and ray qualities in any particular life to work with the manifestation of the monad. And the monadic ray stays the same, of course. But some subsidiary notes, tones, qualities come in to assist that monadic ray, which is basically staying the same and is only changing once throughout the eon, after, you know, into the next eon. So what happens here? What is the result when the personality finds its spiritual note with the right key and subtone? Not just its note, because then we don't know what the function is within the particular scale being used. What happens? It vibrates, it accords with its monadic note. And again, is it the major ray of the monad? Is it the minor ray of the monad? It vibrates to the same measure. It pulsates with the same color. The line of least resistance is at last found. And the indwelling life is liberated and returns to its own plane, And we might call this, this may be the Sea of Fire, where the, to which the liberated monad repairs, which means the place to which it goes. Goes. So comes the time when the consciousness within the personality discovers its higher note and discovers the key in which the higher note plays its function. Like in a way, if you look up on the in the Sea of Fire, we might say this, that the key of C represents the Father, the key of F represents the Mother or the Holy Spirit, and the key of G represents the Son. So that would be green, blue, red. That's one way to look at it. Now, when it comes to our own planet, because we have a first-ray monad, the do will be a D. And the sound eventually will be something like this. And the D will represent the first ray. So it's G, A, D. Excuse me. F, yeah, no, that's right. G, A, D, Gad, God. Okay. So what is the result? When the spiritual note is found with the right key and subtone, there will be an accordance with the monadic note. It vibrates to the same measure, frequency. It pulsates with the same color. I suppose same color as the color of the monad. The line of least resistance is at last found from monad to personality. The permanent astrological axis of the monad is sounding. Astrological, and the indwelling life is liberated and returns to its own plane, which is the Sea of Fire. Is this an easy book? But this work of discovery is very slow, and the man has to pick out the cord with infinite care and pains. So, this will involve picking out the fundamental and an octave higher, the monadic note. Maybe I will discover, let's say I have a first ray monad, and we're going to use the note D as a first ray note. We could also use the note C in a different context, but I have to find that D first, which is the monadic note. And maybe I could also work on the monadic plane and find one of seven notes. The lower fundamental will be the same note as the monadic note, but an octave lower, or however many octaves. And Thus it is for the major ray of the monad, which can differ, probably does differ from the one of the seven monadic rays. It's going to be either Holy Ghost, Son, Father. It's going to be either a first ray monad, a second ray monad, or a third ray monad. So I don't think I've ever quite been so impressed about the intricacy of this system of notes, subnotes, colors, and I suppose subcolors and their interplay. So how does it all go when we're in this slow process? It proceeds as follows. First, he finds out the third of the personality and sounds it forth, the result being an ordered, harmonious life in the three worlds. So let's just use an archetypal color. We'll use green because it represents the third aspect, and the personality is the third aspect. And many people are really trying to find themselves as personalities at this point. And we see it, you know, we just have to open up the news feeds, the newspapers, whatever. Personalities are prominent and they're all over the place. And occasionally you see the soul expressing. Then he finds the dominant fifth of the ego. And since we're dealing with the second aspect of divinity, he calls it the keynote of the chord. That's really important. The dominant is the keynote. I think we've really got to bring that to the fore. The keynote of the coming chord of fundamental personality, soul, and monad is the dominant in music. And sounds that in unison with the personality note. So let's just suppose I was working in the key of C. That's the fundamental. Here is the major third. Here is the dominant B. So we would be going from major third to dominant E. I can't at the moment sing two notes at the same time, but with a little bit of that harmonic singing, it is possible. But I'll spare you the agony here. Okay, so he's going to sound that in unison with the personality note. And what happens? Looks like Master DK learned a lot in the Academy of Pythagoras. The result is that a vacuum is formed, if I may so express it, and the liberated man with his informing soul, the threefold spirit, plus mind and experience, the three completed by the quaternary, and the fifth escapes upward to the monad. Ho, ho, ho. What is the result? The result, apparently, of sounding the perfect third and the fifth together. A vacuum is formed. And the liberated man, I suppose the monad in extension, the prodigal son who went forth with his informing soul. We have to ask, what is that informing soul? Is it the projection of the solar angel, or is it just considered to be his consciousness? His informing soul, the threefold spirit plus mind and experience. That's what the informing soul is. This is a profound series here. And the liberated man, because of the vacuum, with his informing soul, the threefold spirit, the spiritual triad, plus mind and experience, the three completed by the quaternary, which is the personality, and the fifth, which maybe is the Goat Lotus, or some consciousness within the ego lotus, escapes upward to the monad. Whoa, that is quite a statement, caused by the vacuum. This escape is engineered by, and it would seem to me that various vacuums have to appear. In order for various escapes to occur, it is the law of attraction demonstrated through sound, like to like and kind to kind, driven thereto by unity of sound, of color, and of rhythm. Well, this is some of the most advanced occultism that DK has offered. And I don't know, I can't find anything in Cosmic Fire which is especially beyond such statements as are offered here. Sound is the attractive medium in this case. A vacuum is created and ascension occurs. Ascension occurs to the realm of the Akasha. On the monadic plane, the sixth from below, second from above. So here, in the language of sound, is how escape of the immersed lower is engineered toward reabsorption by the highest aspects of the human energy system. It just gets deeper and deeper. So, discovering, what do we have to do? We have to discover the spiritual note within the right key and subtone. And it's got to be, it has to accord with the monadic note. The discovered spiritual note must accord with the monadic note. And maybe we should capitalize that idea of monadic note and get our word spiritual correct. And then that discovered note will vibrate to the same measure. And in other words, it will be really either identical or harmonic with the monadic note. Or this discovered note will be identical to or harmonic with the monadic note. The line of least resistance is at last found. The two ends of the stick, let's just say the sun and point opposite axis, are operating in the horoscope. The monadic ray is operative and maybe also the very highest of the monadic rays begins to be operative. And the indwelling life is liberated to its own plane, which I think is the sea of fire, or the logoic plane, or the highest aspect of Shambhala, if we're, you know, talking now within our planetary scheme. But it's a slow process. The man has to find the cord, I suppose, among many, many changing chords. And we discover our personality first, I think. Conscious discovery. This is what I am. I am that, or I am. And then comes the discovery of I am that. And this is, I think, very interesting. The dominant fifth of the ego is the keynote of the chord. And that to me means a great deal. Because we're not given the keynote of our solar system. So it all depends on the do we begin with. If we begin with the Red Sea, then the keynote is blue, the G. If we begin on the indigo A, then the keynote is the yellow. It's the fifth from A. And if we begin, for some reason, following Blavatsky with the D as the keynote, because it is the sun color, do re, then again, the keynote is a fifth, and it's the note la, which is indigo. So it looks to me like, although it's not given, because it is one of the secrets of the sixth initiation, that the keynote of our solar system is going to be G or A or E. In other words, a blue, an indigo, or a yellow note. And all of those seem to be good candidates. Well, friends, maybe I had no idea or no good memory of what I was wading into again. And if this does nothing else but acquaint you or reacquaint you with some of the considerations, so even if we can't solve them all, it would have done something. And to show how the language of sound and the language of color is not really offered here as a digression, but tells us something about how the creative constructive process operates with respect to the macrocosm, and then we can apply it to the microcosm. So basically, we're on page 57, 50, 58. And I'm going to go back. No, I was kind of too tired to do this. But what I've discovered is sometimes in reading Master DK and saying what one thinks about it, that in fact new energy comes. And this has been also the 27th of July. So I'll go down here, you know, because it's just so easy to lose one's place. And I'm very cognizant of this tendency of the second ray to build forms within forms, which is not the healthiest thing to do, as he tries to explain to us the liabilities of the imperfections of the various rays in terms of health. So basically we're going from 53 to 57, 58, and our date is the 27th, and we have finished program 14. Glad to be off program 13 and continuing with program 15. I hope that's correct. And we'll begin with whenever we begin, 57, 58, and it'll be the XX of, I hope, July. Tomorrow's one of my free days, free-ish, before a whole new cycle of ASK programs begins. So I hope to be able to deal with this somewhat. And then we're going to get into the destructive factor. We've been into the creative factor, creative constructive factor, how the solar system is put together. And somewhere up here, maybe I'm not going to be able to find it. Maybe it's not worth it. Yeah, but here it is. And looks like all of this is under postulate one. Is it so? And we have been dealing with, let's just say, in program 14, we have been dealing with the creative constructive use of sacred work. And now we'll turn to its destructive use. It is an obscure subject, all of this. And as I say, if we, you know, because using the form that I'm using, it can become a little confusing. I would recommend going back to the more condensed presentation in the book, and we're liable to see things more under the eye simultaneously. And when we go back to this question of the postulates, looks like we have been dealing with five postulates. And the first one has been our major focus. that all that exists is based on sound or on the word. So for many pages below this, the first postulate is the major subject with many subdivisions. I think that is safe to say. It is the great creative factor. And at a certain point, I'll know whether I'm correct in my outlining when we start talking about differentiation, if we do start talking about that, is the result of sound, and maybe each one of these postulates will be taken up. Remember that the postulates themselves are based upon the seven fundamentals of the secret doctrine, only three of which have really emerged in concrete form. Okay. So we are closing here on 57:58. We've seen the great breaths and subtones being equivalent and in the creative process of the Soda Logos, or at least a reasonable estimation that they are equivalent. And we've seen what happens under the different subtones, which are related to the seven rays as well. Gosh, you could write a whole thesis or dissertation on these factors that are here given to us. And we're now going to come to the destructive use of the word, which takes us to 2.2. Okay. It takes us, yeah, the destructive use of the Om, but that still doesn't take us back to the anything beyond, I think, the first postulate under which all of this seems to be occurring. If we get into something called differentiation, we're going to know that we have entered the realm of the second postulate. What good is it all? It just gives us an idea of the specificity and intricacy of the subjective process that lies beneath what we call the emergence of creation. And we begin to realize the fifth ray, the importance of the fifth ray in discovering all of these processes behind what is obvious. Certainly, DK is doing a lot of subdividing, and our task is to stay with him as he subdivides. I'm not finding it easy. I imagine you aren't either, but after thinking together about these things, if you reread in the book, you know, like from page 50 to 58, I think it will all be clearer. Meanwhile, we look above into the macrocosm and the kind of solar systemic process he seems to be describing, and we then can learn something about our own individual process. So it turns out to be true that as above, so below. Okay, friends, lots of love, many blessings. I have no idea how long this program is, but I've decided, instead of just trying to time it out at like 1 hour, 1 hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever. But I'll try to go with the subject matter, beginning maybe a new program at a point where there is new subject matter. But these letters are actually quite extensive. And they're not certainly the letter of a single day. As he says, yesterday we were doing thus and so, and it's all in the same letter. So all the best, and we're finished now with program 14. Hope you've gotten something out of it, at least a sense of immersion into the connections between things, based upon, often upon ray and numerical affinity. See you then.